Welcome to Pharmacy Focus, Policy Edition, where we discuss important legislative developments and their impact in pharmacy. On this episode of Pharmacy Focus, Policy Edition, we spoke with Friar Levitt attorneys Day Lee and Harini Bapudi to discuss ways that pharmacists can be prepared for 2024, as well as reviewing PBM audits and trends. So just to begin, what notable trends have you observed in PBM audit strategies throughout 2023, and how are these trends expected to continue in 2024?
Sure, I can go ahead and start with that question. So PBM audits have just continued to be, I'd say, more and more aggressive as the years pass by. The issues that they review pharmacies for, to some extent, have remained the same, but to another extent, obviously, with a changing landscape, we see them focus on much more specific issues. So for example, in 23, we saw PBMs focus a lot more on hub pharmacy arrangements, especially where pharmacies have entered into hub arrangements where they might have violated specific terms and conditions of their PBM provider manual. For example, the outsourcing of the collection of copays might have been prohibited, where a pharmacy might have otherwise given that permission to a hub would be construed to be in violation of their provider manual or the PBM provider manual. In addition to giving permission to a hub to be able to process claims on behalf of a pharmacy, those types of issues specific to hub pharmacy arrangements were certainly an area of focus for 23. Another area of focus, I'd say, that we've seen continue and much more aggressively in 23 is that of prior authorizations, specifically the pharmacy's involvement of prior authorizations. Several PBMs have limitations on whether a pharmacy can be involved in the prior authorization process or if it's a process that has to be completed and submitted by, say, the patient or often the prescriber. So that continues to be an area of scrutiny. We've seen not only PBMs focus on that in audits, but also their clients, meaning individual plans, also focus on that in the course of their own audits of pharmacies. So that continues to be not only a concern from prior to 23 with increased scrutiny in 23, but I do expect that to continue into 24 as well.
What do you see as like the major challenges and opportunities for pharmacies in 2024, considering the evolving landscape of PBM regulation and enforcement?
First of all, the PBMs have already begun retracting the mailing and shipping waiver for the pharmacies in their retail pharmacy networks. So pharmacies they won't be able to ship or mail prescriptions to the patients anymore. Otherwise, they will be deemed in violation of the PBM provider manual. And there will also be more scrutiny on pharmacies as PBMs are getting more pressure from different level of legislators. PBMs have been regularly updating their provider manuals, but one of the major PBMs just updated their provider manual to include significant changes. Pharmacies must be cognizant of all these changes, but at the same time, pharmacies have more, tools, legal tools to work with nowadays. More states are passing new laws or trying to pass new laws that will strengthen the pharmacist's position against PBMs, and more PBM regulations are happening at both the federal and state level. So pharmacies could monetize on those opportunities to dispute any egregious PBM audit practices that, had resulted in, financial recruitment in the past.
And just to branch off of what Day just mentioned, in terms of their changes to provider manuals, and this goes back to the first question of sort of what audit strategies or what audit trends have we seen in 23 to continue into 24, is just the requirements that pharmacies adhere to these changing provider manuals, whether that means maintaining additional documentation for something as simple as collecting copayments in cash to maintaining proper inventory from, say, licensed wholesalers or authorized distributors, if it's diabetic testing supplies, or even pedigree documentation, especially with the Drug Supply Chain Act, additional requirements going into effect in November of 24 for pharmacies to also maintain this information. So there are a lot of ongoing issues that we see pharmacies could encounter in 24. But of course, as Day mentioned, there are certain laws and tools that pharmacies should be aware of to be able to use.
In Michigan, House Bill 4276 has been passed. The bill urges transparency among PBMs to the pharmacy. What are the implications of this bill, and should we start to expect other states or even at the federal level to begin to follow suit?
Sure. I mean, this state law is a great start to regulate PBMs and to achieve more transparency. You know, the pharmacies that have fewer than 7 stores under common ownership should expect to be reimbursed at NADAC, UNC, or WAC. At the same time, PBMs are required to report rebates to the states, and as well as the reimbursement that PBMs paid out on prescription drug claims to the pharmacies. However, but the thing is, the act, the law does not mandate PBMs wholly owned rebate aggregators to report the rebates or administrative fees that these rebate aggregators retain and not share with the plan sponsors, including, you know, in this case, is Medicaid contracted health plans. So there's certainly, you know, it's a great start, but there are certain limits to it. You know, it would be great, it would be ideal if the law gets amended or to include certain things, including but not limited to rebate reporting by rebate aggregators owned by PBMs. And these rebate aggregators include Zinc, owned by CVS Health, Ascent Health, located or based out of Switzerland, that is owned by Cigna Express Script, and Mr. Pharma Services, based out of Ireland, that is owned by United OptumRx. And there are other states, I believe as of last June of last year, that there are 15 states that have enacted PBM transparency laws. And we foresee that more states will implement similar or the same type of PBM transparency laws or regulations. And the same thing is happening at the Congress level. So it's there, like I said before, the pharmacies will have more tools to work with when challenging PBM's actions against them.
What proactive measures can pharmacies take to minimize the risk of monetary penalties and disruptions in network operations? And how can pharmacies strengthen their compliance programs and documentation?
One of the first ways is to make sure that pharmacies have a compliance program. Many pharmacies might rely on standard SOPs that aren't specific to their practices, more like boilerplate templates where they just have to insert their pharmacy name, but aren't actually following through with those policies. And so it's very important for pharmacies to, one, implement, to develop a compliance program, but then two, to actually implement and see it through, to make sure that their staff is thoroughly trained on those policies and procedures, and to make sure that's very well documented, that one, there's a policy in place, but then two, that their staff is also well trained on it. The other thing is to make sure that those policies and their compliance measures are constantly being reviewed by way of a self-audit, you know, through a randomized self-audit. Say that there's a significant number of claims the pharmacy processes. It's not the expectation the pharmacy reviews each one of its claims, but perhaps a subset of them or a randomized number of claims. And to that extent, pharmacies should also make sure that they're reviewing their compliance policies in relation to PBM provider manuals and state laws as well, but especially to avoid any sort of audit discrepancies or potential termination, it's important for them to review them against PBM provider manuals. The other thing is to make sure that Pharmacies are well aware of what their rights are to be able to challenge such audits or any other type of adverse actions, and also to hire, of course, effective counsel or assistance to be able to address these types of issues with PBMs. Day, I'll let you add on anything else you might have.
Yeah, I mean, I echo your statements about having the tailored policy and procedures, and you know, making sure that the pharmacies conduct internal audits time to time. And of course, you know, pharmacies must be able to, I mean, they must engage effective counsel who is, you know, subject matter expert in the pharmacy benefits industry in order to navigate actions taken by PBMs. And they must, you know, they must be cognizant of all the changes that are made within the provider manual, and as well as the pharmacy's rights under the provider manual, as well as the state law.
One of the other things, and this goes back to, again, our one of our initial questions about audit trends, is beyond, you know, the typical audit discrepancies that we see related to copay collection, drug inventory shortages, patient or prescriber denials, is another expectation that pharmacies are adhering to their state board of pharmacy requirements as well. For example, when it comes to dispensing any sort of medications, including compound medications, we're seeing a lot more, we're expecting a lot more audit issues to come up for dispensing GLP-1s such as Wegovy or Ozempic, you know, similar types of medications, and a review into whether or not they're being dispensed for not be to make sure that they're not being dispensed for off-label or not being when it's not being supported by a compendia.
How can pharmacists best navigate typical audit and dispute resolution processes employed by PBMs? And are there specific legal or procedural considerations that pharmacies should be aware of when disputing these audit findings?
Yes, every major PBM have their PBM provider manuals, which include dispute resolution procedure. Pharmacies must follow the dispute resolution procedure, and they must exhaust it. There are certain timelines whereby the PBMs request certain documents or allow the appeal responses to be submitted. It is important that pharmacies not miss those deadlines and must provide documents in a very well-organized manner. And if there is no dispute resolution procedure in a provider manual, then the pharmacy must lean on the state law. Many states, like I said before, many states have enacted fair audit laws. So those fair audit laws typically include or touch upon the dispute resolution procedure. So pharmacies must follow those state laws in the absence of provider manual.
Are there common pitfalls that pharmacies should avoid when interacting with regulatory bodies following a PBM audit?
Yes, I guess the question is asking whether pharmacies, whether PBMs do report pharmacies to governing bodies, and the answer is yes. You know, it is quite often, or it is not uncommon for PBMs to report or share their audit findings with governing bodies, whether it be the Office of Inspector General or a state Medicaid fraud unit or task force. And pharmacies must, you know that whenever they're communicating with these government auditors, investigators, you know, they must know that there's any statement that they make could be used against them. And any document they submit, it may be used against them as well. And any communication that these pharmacies may submit to PBMs, PBMs may and can share those with the governing body. So pharmacies must take a cautionary approach when communicating with the governing bodies.
The other thing that pharmacies should also be aware of when interacting with any sort of regulatory bodies is their expectations and their requirements under their PBM contracts. So While a PBM might have been the entity to report the pharmacy, in the event that a pharmacy, say, gets a subpoena or gets a complaint from the Board of Pharmacy, there may be a requirement to notify the PBM of such action by the regulatory body. Obviously, the PBM might be very well aware of it because they might have been the one to have reported the pharmacy in the first place, but the pharmacy should be aware of their contractual obligations to make such reporting to PBMs, because we've seen in many instances the failure to report any action by a regulatory body could then result in adverse action such as termination or a notice of contract violation against the pharmacy.
And then lastly, as we're just beginning to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to add that we might not have touched on?
No, but I want to add that or reiterate that the pharmacies are in a better position nowadays to dispute or challenge any audit finding issued by PBMs by utilizing the state laws, by utilizing federal law, as well as the dispute resolution procedure set forth in the PBM's provider manual. But the pharmacies must follow those dispute resolution procedure and also be prepared, really, really be prepared to respond to PBM audits by, you know, putting together the document in a well-organized manner, conducting self-audit and consulting with industry experts.
I echo everything Day said. It's always best for a pharmacy to be proactive in their efforts rather than reactive, not only in terms of their own measures that they implement at the pharmacy level, but also being knowledgeable about the tools, legal or not, that they have available to themselves in the event of any PBM adverse action. It's important for pharmacies to continue to be informed and updated about not only their obligations, but also what's available to them to challenge any sort of adverse actions, not just by PBMs, but any regulatory bodies.
I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times. Thank you for listening to Pharmacy Focus Policy Edition, where we discuss important legislative developments as well as policy updates and their impact on pharmacy.